Blog Talk Radio. Person. She said, he's that gorgeous guy, the one you said was so handsome, when we were at that hotel on the roof with the pool. Remember, we did the photographs. Mike Greco.
That was a very fun evening.
That's right. So then we went to the night that Mike was doing, and it was great. There was a little lobby and red lacquer, and we set it up, and it was just fabulous. I got to see Mike Greco's band, and let me tell you, this boy, this is why he calls himself a synthesizer and a keyboard player, because he can program a lot of stuff. I saw some and heard some amazing stuff that they did live. He did live, Mike Greco. So then the next time, the same thing happened. And Mike Greco stepped up to the plate again and arranged something at the Black Rose. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm really impressed by Men of Action, Mike. Thank you so much.
Well, Angie, I mean, first off, I just want to thank you for that introduction, because that was very sweet and beautiful of you to say. And, you know, for me, I was just so honored to have met you via Miss Guy that first night. And we had such a great time together and amazing connection. And I thought to myself, you know, this woman is a legend. You're a music legend, a fashion legend, and I'm honored to get to know you and work with you. So it was really my pleasure to do those things, honestly.
Well, thank you. I wanted to tell everyone. I think the world of you, and I'll tell you what makes me so excited, because Rick knows that we try to be really inclusive and intergenerational and international, you know, and cosmopolitan and rural and urban, and as many chunks and segments of wonderful folks that we can squash into the show. And you are just the most charming young face of New York. I adore young people. I don't get to hang out with them so much, except when I go out to promote stuff, because you feel like a weirdo. You know what I mean. When hormones drain, it's best to get out of the way. So I'm always like, real bravo, everyone. Throw me a show. Throw me a bone, something I can watch and enjoy. And then I have to scoot off.
I don't know, Angie. I mean, every time that I've ever been out with you, I have a hard time keeping up with you, to be honest.
Well, we've certainly had the good fortune of being in New York, which is very hard not to be, you know, accommodated, engaged, charmed, entertained.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yes, I know what you mean. It's such a wonderful city. I'm so happy for you doing your graduate work in music in the city of New York. There's no better place for you to be studying.
I really, I love it here. And as many places that I've been, to either play and work and meet people, I've always, when I come back here, I'm very grateful to be located here, mainly. So it's an inspiring city, artistically, and I don't have to tell you that. I don't think so.
No, but you know what? I watched the best show today. It was, don't laugh, it was called The History of the World in 2 Hours. And they did the most brilliant description of cities that, it, you know, when you get the friction going, that is culture and art. Because you got to have everything squashed together so that it all rubs up and makes some action, some activity, some friction. I loved it. And the graphics were huge and panoramic, you know what I mean, high def. It was like, well, of course, how brilliant is this? Why didn't I think of this?
Yes, well, sometimes we don't always think of the best fun ideas, but I guess in New York, you know, the possibilities are endless in terms of creativity, I think.
Yes, I think you're right. Now, let me throw you a quick one. This is going to make you laugh. I did not catch the photograph of you, which Rick Hunt caught and posted, Tell me what that great photograph with the piano keyboards on your back. It's brilliant.
Which photo are you referring to?
Rick, describe it. You posted it. I reposted it.
It was a picture of your back, Michael, and it had a keyboard on it and one of those plastic tubes that came over your shoulder and was going over into your
like
mouth.
Like for music sustenance.
Yes, that photo, I'm actually, that's shocking to me that you found that photo because I didn't think that it was anywhere on the internet. That was taken by a very talented friend of mine, photographer Colin Shields, and he had this project he was doing around New York City with fellow artists that he was close to, and basically he wanted his friends to take a piece of them or something that inspires them, and you know, he put them in a room and took the photo of their back, and that actual instrument is a melodica. I picked that instead of having, you know, a regular keyboard or standing a giant piano or something behind me because I thought it would be a little more pleasing to the eye. So he took that photo, and the tube that you see coming into my mouth is, you have to blow through that in order to make a sound. It's similar, I think Stevie Wonder has used it, Donald Fagen from Steely Dan uses that as well. Yeah, it's a fun little instrument, and that was a really great photo. I was quite young in that picture, so.
Well, it was startlingly impressive. I looked at it and I thought, whoa, this is good. You know, because in a lot of the photographs, it's very hard when a person is handsome and pretty. It's like, okay, now, at what point do we get the set jaw? You know what I mean? That moment between being pleased.
You're so complimentary today on this interview. I'm flattered.
I have the same problem, Michael.
Forgive me. I don't mean to make you embarrassed. I just I thought it was fascinating because that photograph was like, yo. And I am the keyboard player. It was like, well, fuck me. Okay, I've got it now, baby doll. It was honestly very impressive.
So what are you doing now with your music, Michael? Can you give us a clue as to what kinds of things are happening?
Sure. Well, at the moment, I mean, Angie had messaged me, I think it was either yesterday or the day before, about original music. And right now in my music career, which is still, I guess, in its early stages. I'm 25 years old, so I kind of have decided to, this year in 2015, lay back on some of the tribute stuff and outsource work that I do normally, and to focus on original music because that's really what's important to me. And, you know, writing, and whether it be writing for other artists, and if I have the honor to, you know, play my music for people myself, you know, that would be something that I would really love to do. So I thought this is the year to focus on original compositions and writings and recordings and see where I can really go with that. Mm-hmm. So that's where I am, and I have a lot of demos that are in the process of being finished, possibly looking at putting out an EP come early 2016. So my goal right now. So I'm focusing on that. And then, of course, the nightlife / music production company that I run with Marianne Piccolo, Dandelight Productions, you know, I kind of keep myself busy there with other musical endeavors, whether it be tributes or putting bands together for people. So still doing some of that because I really do love that, and I would never stop. But like I said, just maybe focusing a little more on original stuff at the moment. So that's where I'm at.
Now, what are some of your influences? who are the people that you enjoy listening to or admire?
Well, I have to say, early on, growing up, my first love of music was with my mother's parents, and my grandfather ran a big band, and he played banjo, bass, guitar, and tenor guitar, and he had about a 15-piece band, and they played all standards and everything from Glenn Miller to, you know, Sentimental Journey. I mean, just everything, and it was really great to be young and around that my whole life. And I actually, all I would listen to was music from the 30s and 40s. And I was obsessed with that till about, I would say, 6 or 8 years old. And that's when I was demonized by rock and roll. Because my father and uncle are musicians, and they are around their 60s now. And, you know, so they grew up at a time where I would say it was the golden age of music, 60s and 70s. You really can't get any better than that. I don't care what anybody says. and not to say that I don't enjoy artists now that are coming out with new things, and but there's just something about that era of music that really resonated with me, and I think that you can take any modern composition or thing that you hear on the radio, and you can hear an influence from the 60s or the 70s. And that says a lot, because I don't know, come 40 years from now, if something would be on the radio and you can say, oh, well, that's an influence from 2014 or something. So I really gained a lot of inspiration and my love for performing and being a musician from rock and roll, probably from 8 on and all the way through high school. You know, bands like, first love for me was Traffic, actually.
Great band.
Great band, and relatively unknown. And at the time, I was probably like 9 years old, and I was going into music stores asking for like a Traffic music book, and the guys would look at me like, who the heck is this little kid asking for this band from the 60s? You know? So I'm remembering now. This is a lot of fun, because I don't take the time to really think about a lot of these things. But the first song I ever learned to play on piano was "Low Spark of High Heeled Boys" by Traffic. So that was an early influence, and from there, I really began to get into Led Zeppelin and Motown. And those are the things that I remember most about very early influences. And I can definitely say that the earlier music kind of comes into your life, the more that it stays with you. And when you become a more developed artist later on, you hear your earliest influences more so than anything else. So I found that interesting, especially with Led Zeppelin, because I used to think, and this is probably like probably around the same age. I used to think Robert Plant was a god. You know, I didn't know what I wanted from Robert Plant, but I knew that he was like sex icon and just the most soulful voice from a white man that I've ever really heard in terms of being unique and different. You know, he wasn't trying to sound like a black voice, but he put his own spin on it. And and now when I sing stuff or improvise, sometimes I'll listen to myself and I'm like, oh, shit, that sounds like something Robert Plant would do in a recording, and I realized kind of, you know, how much that
like that can't be a bad thing.
No, it can't be. It's not a bad thing, but sometimes it definitely, it's definitely interesting to kind of separate yourself from your influence. Let's put it that way.
Yes, and it can characterize something that you were actually going somewhere else with. I know what you mean.
Right.
Sometimes you look
yeah.
into it.
Right.
It happened to me once, and I sang this one bit, and it sounded like Edith Piaf, and I thought, not that much. Don't do it that much. Be a bit less obvious. It sounds good, but shoot, did I go over the top?
Yeah. that's true. It's a very scary moment in creating.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I know what you described it so perfectly, especially with Robert as the role model.
Yeah, right.
But it's funny, Rick and I had a bunch of questions for you, which we also asked other folks, strangely enough, also from New York, from musical families. You know,
yeah.
Jan Kelly, her family are all musicians.
I love Jan.
Yeah, Alan Merrill, you know, his family are all musicians. I mean, it's kind of like popular music. And all the fringe music that goes with all the genres of popular music is just as much in evidence in New York as the Philharmonic and the ballet. And, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's And I would say that, just speaking of New York, you have people like Jan, who I just saw last week, and she's amazingly talented. And, you know, you not only if you come from a musical family and you meet people like that here in New York, you kind of build your own family here as well, which influences you further. And Jan is definitely part of my musical family here, as well as many other talented people that I've had the pleasure of working with. And there's friendships and connections that I, you know, I don't know what I would be lost without some of the musicians in my life here. So
right.
Just I'm trying to think of a few to name, but you know, like Joe Young, who's an amazing guitarist.
May I ask you to draw a portrait for us of Mary Ann Pickley, who I adore, as you know. I just think the world of her. So please tell us about how that working relationship is for you guys with the promotional company. That must be very fun, you know, and doing your events and all that fun stuff.
It is. Well, I will say this. When the event happens, it is a blast, and it's a lot of fun. When you're doing things like that, there's so much preparation beforehand. And when you're a bit crazy like Marianne and I and kind of want everything to be perfect, you kind of work at an insane pace, and you lose sight about how much fun the night will be or the event would be. So it's very rewarding, you know, come the end of the night. But a lot goes into that, and Marianne is we definitely complement each other in a business way. And as well as, you know, when we're out and around people, we work very well together. But behind the scenes, Marianne's very organized, and she's a taskmaster. She makes sure everything is on point and keeps the ship sailing, so to speak. And her creative mind is... sometimes I can't believe how quickly she comes up with a solution to creative problems. She can look at you, if you don't know what you're going to wear to an event, right, she can look at you and tell you exactly what the outfit is that you need to be wearing. And she convinces you that she's correct. So it's very nice. And you actually leave you leave with the confidence that, oh shit, you know, this is correct.
Yes, this
you
will
know,
work.
This is the right thing. This will work. Yes. And she's very supportive, and she's an artistic genius in my book, and I love working with her, and for me, in terms of her organizational skills, that's something that I have in certain aspects of my life, but when it comes to planning an event, a musical event, there's so many things that go around in my head in terms of putting the band together, getting the actual music prepared and a set list and things like that. So my mind isn't always focused on that. So having Marianne, you know, kind of pick up the other end of things and always keep it going is so helpful, and that's why we really have worked well together. And I can't say there's been an event that we've done that hasn't been a ton of fun and at least moderately successful. That's how I can best describe our relationship.
Well, I think that was an amazing description and lovely, and kudos to you, darling, because every time a person takes the time to appreciate and give kudos, I think it builds and repairs and fortifies the structure of one's friendship.
Absolutely. No, that's
you know what I mean? It just sort of makes you take a moment and think, oh, yeah. That is why they're so great. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's because you lose sight of those things in daily life, because everything can be so hectic sometimes, and you don't take the time to appreciate and really speak about it. So that's another reason why this interview has thus far been really amazing, because you know the time to really talk about a lot of these things. So it's great.
No, but I, you know what I mean? I just was thinking about it, and the hearing you testify, it was great. It was like, you know, you were reminding yourself of all of the amazing things that she brings to the table. And that too. I love all of the pals that go with it. Our darling Miss Guy, who you know, Rick and I had a great, wonderful radio show interviewing Miss Guy. I'd love to interview Darian Darling, too. I know that all of your group, when I first met you all, what is the name of that hotel that we were up on the roof with the pool?
The hotel that we were at.
That first one,
that,
when I first met
that
you
that was, yeah, the very first night we met with the hotel and the pool, that was at the Thompson Hotel in the Lower
Thompson.
East Side.
It was Thompson, and then I thought, now you're thinking about Thompson Square or something. You know what I mean? I doubted myself. Okay.
You know, I have such a funny story about that night. I don't even think I ever told you this, or it had put my mind to even tell the story. But you were talking about Miss Guy. Guy is one of my closest friends, and I love him to death. And he is just the most gracious, funny, talented human being. And
I
just love Guy. I mean, you won't come across a more humble individual. And he just has, and I think being that way, he has been able to, just his success just continues on because he's so humble and amazing. So that night, he invited me out along with Darian, and I had just come off doing a string of shows, and I was exhausted, and I was like, God, I don't know if I can really do this tonight. And but I said, okay, I'll throw on some rags and bring my stuff to this rooftop. So and I was actually living on 2nd Street and 2nd Avenue, and so the Thompson Hotel is within walking distance for me. And my Colin Shields, who is a roommate of mine, the one that took the photo with the keyboard on my back, he had just purchased a used Bowie coffee table book that he threw on our table as I was getting ready to go out and stuff. And I was like, oh, what is this book here? And I was flipping through, and I had seen a picture of you, and I was thinking, I was like, wow, this is a fucking great photo. And I was talking to Colin, I was like, do you see that? And we were talking about your outfit. I'm trying to figure out how to best describe this picture of you, but we were just going on and on about it, and I remember getting dressed and going to this rooftop, and I had no idea that you and Guy knew each other at all, you know, and I'm standing there towards the end of the night, and we're talking, and you came in with April, and I believe you were with Annette as well.
Yeah, the gang.
Yeah. You were, and you came in, and Guy was so happy to see you. He said he hadn't seen you in years, and he was so happy that you came by, and I was like, who is that? And he's like, that's Angela Bowie. And I was like, holy shit, I was just looking at a photo of her, you know, at the beginning of the evening. I mean, I just think that things like that are so strange, how the universe works in that way. But that night was a lot of fun. And if I remember correctly, we continued the fun probably a little too long.
We did. I mean, I remember when Annette and I left, I remember we stood very still and clung on to each other and waited for a cab.
Well, because we ended the night at the Standard Hotel with Suzanne Bartsch at On Top. That's her Tuesday night party. And we wound up going there. And I remember you and I had taken a cab together there.
That's right. We went there first.
We went to the Thompson. The Thompson was first, and then we went to the Standard, which was that's how, you know, you and I really got to know each other further then, because you were telling me a bunch of stories.
Exactly.
On the rooftop there. So it was actually one of the more memorable evenings for me. I enjoyed that night a lot.
It was wonderful, wasn't it? Now, Rick, what was the other thing that we noticed about the whole New York thing? I should have asked Tony Visconti if he would like to do the show, because Tony Visconti is the first person I knew who in London started a rock and roll school. And it was highly controversial, and everyone had an opinion about it. But anyway, he went on ahead. And then you remember we had Chris Robeson on the show, and Chris Robeson has been teaching songwriting and guitar playing and keyboards for as long as anyone can remember. And both his boys are songwriters and musicians, although I understand one of them is not following up on that. And then there's Gary and Eva. Gary is teaching music in New York also, is he not, Rick?
Yes, he is. Yep. He gives private lessons, and yes, he does teach.
So
he also has a book out.
That's right. He's got a was that about technique and theory,
mm-hmm.
or was that about studios and technique and theory?
I want to say it was about techniques and theory.
Oh, yes. I'm getting confused, because Chris Robeson, apart from teaching, also builds studios. And so I was juxtaposing who had written what about what. Yes, I see what you mean. But, I mean, what do you think, Mike? I guess it's just the New York ambience that makes people want to give back, makes them happy to contribute, to teach, to do all of the different things. Now, I've got to say, Mike, I really am in awe. I was talking to Rick about this earlier. I think what you did with putting your toe into the waters of musicals, of doing that little piece of... Now, tell us exactly how that went with Sound of Music, and then also working with the chorus. for the I have it written down here. The Ustan anniversary chorus with the cast of Les Misérables. I don't know, but it seems to me like you've been building this great resume of work for your performance, for your voice, for your presentation. Am I jumping ahead? Am I being too?
Well, no, I'm. You're not at all. I'm just in a bit of a state of shock because you really did your research on my life, because I didn't even know that was available to find out about me. That moment in my life, I was kind of, I guess, and I'm definitely, you know, I'm so thankful to my parents because they have supported me through my entire life, musically and mentally as well. So they were the ones that were responsible for me creating, you know, an early footprint, musical footprint like that. And I've always loved musicals, and when I was younger, I was involved in theater, and then I had this other half of me that was wanting to be a musician and be a rocker and, you know, play jazz and do all kinds of stuff. So I had those two things, and the Sound of Music was just a regional. It was a regional tour, and I played the oldest son, Friedrich, and that was fun to do. Definitely a learning experience for me. I had never done, I was young at the time, and I had never done a tour at all of any kind, so that was a lot of fun.
Good way to learn.
Yeah, for sure. And
good for you.
And I totally forgot about the Usedan event and the anniversary thing at Carnegie Hall. I was 10 years old, and I just had really fell into a lucky position to be part of this choir that year, and they selected a few, I would say probably about 20 singers to be involved in this event, and they had the cast of Les Mis. And I want to say it was, at the time, Les Mis was already in a revival stage on Broadway, but they had the original cast of Les Mis sing with us, which they were on the original cast recording. And it was the finale of the show, and we did One Day More. And I was thinking, which is a beautiful song, and I was thinking to myself while doing that, you know, it was my first time ever in Carnegie Hall, let alone to be on the stage at Carnegie Hall. It was like, and I was young, and I'm thinking, wow, this is great. I need to do this for the rest of my life. And, so it was really an amazing experience. And I will tell a funny story about that, which I'm not proud of now, but it is funny. When I was in Carnegie Hall in the dressing room and everybody was getting ready to go on stage, there was a little cart in the hallway, and I'm thinking, man, I need some kind of souvenir for this moment in time. And the cart had a bunch of these beautiful, beautifully ornate gold silverware. And I said, you know what, I'm going to take this spoon and bring it home with me and remember this moment. So I stole a spoon from Carnegie Hall, and that was the end of that. But, I mean, in terms of musicals, I kind of decided at the end of high school that I was going to let the theater or actor part of me go to sleep and kind of focus on being a musician. Because I really just wanted to play music and sing, and I wasn't interested in really being part of the theater community as an actor. I wasn't focused on that at that point. So that's how all of that came about.
Well, it's a different discipline and a different regime, isn't it? It's
100%,
kind of like playing tennis or playing a team sport.
Yeah. No.
You know what I mean? I always get such a kick out of Alice Cooper. He was the captain of the track team. and everyone on the track team was in the band with him. So
really?
When,
I didn't know that.
So I'm interviewing him for Lipstick Legends, and I said, blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, he said, you know what it's like. You were a prefect at your school. I was captain of the track team. It was just the same as preparing for track meets. We just got ready, and then we did shows every night, just as if we were on a run-up to the championship. And I started laughing because...
That's a great analogy.
It is. It's a great analogy, and he always speaks the truth. I have to say that. He's funny, and he's got, you know, he just lays it out. But what you're saying is exactly right. You know, for you, that wasn't what you had in mind. It's, you know, when you want to play tennis, you don't need to play football.
Right. Yeah. That's a really great way to describe it. That's what I was definitely feeling and thinking at the time. And but you're right, the discipline for an actor. I have many friends that are actors and do musical theater. And actually I have the reason that I have so many friends in that area is because of Marianne Piccolo. You know, she's an actress and performer, and that's her thing. And I'm always in awe of the type of you know, work that they really have to do. It's so different from what I do normally, and I really appreciate their discipline. So definitely a different world
yes.
In some ways.
Yeah, no, you're right. I always feel a great compassion and a great sense of respect and admiration for dancers and singers and all of the folks who make up what a good piece of theater is. It doesn't necessarily have to be singing or dancing, you know what I mean?
And it's the work.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Mark.
Well, I was just going to say the work is very difficult, and it's I'm amazed seeing what they have to really do to get a show like that, where, you know, a really, like you said, a great piece of theater up and running. Yes. I on that ship that I was on, Royal Caribbean's Liberty of the Seas, there was a production of Saturday Night Fever happening, and I was fortunate enough to get to know everyone in the show because of Marianne. She was playing Flo Monero, and
right.
Got to see the amount of time all the performers put into the show and how invested they were in making sure it was the best product. Between, you know, choreography and, you know, doing run-throughs before every show and taking notes, you know, they never, the actors never stopped caring about the product. And I think that's very important in any aspect of music or performing. So.
Bravo. Absolutely. Well said. Very well described. Yeah, bravo. I couldn't agree more. I think in a way, the touring companies and the cruising companies provide a greater platform than they realize.
Oh, yeah,
not
definitely.
Just, do you know what I mean? It's like those folks are having a chance to go ahead and do their work in a safe and confined environment where they have an audience who they can try it out on. And so it almost makes it like a distilled experimental laboratory where they can
get
fast results.
Yeah, and I think that it the people that are frequent cruisers on things like that, they're really not all too familiar with what goes into doing a production like that. And it's great for the audience as well, because, you know, they get to see something that is on you know, some of the productions are on the level of a Broadway show. And
yes.
So it's definitely a great thing, in my opinion.
In our opinion. Well done.
Our opinion, yes.
I'm laughing at that scene when that judge kept making the woman say that on television. When she kept charging her money and say, unless she said, in my opinion, I can't think what show it was, but it was the best.
Seen that before. It's very funny.
Now, what about you? So how many of these cruises have you done?
Well,
I've done 30. I cruised 30 times. After I talked to you and you said you were going to be able to be on the show this time, that you weren't out at sea, I thought, okay, how many ships did I go on? Who did I see? Who were the performers? And I thought I was going to, you know, stack my stuff so I'd have plenty of things. But then I thought to myself, I didn't know how many times you'd gone out and done this. Did you get a chance to do it a couple of times, or how did it work?
Well, how that works is because Marianne was technically an employee on the ship as you know, a performer, she had her own cabin, and she would sign me on the ship to, I believe the first time was just to visit, and then I went back for her birthday. I was on the ship a total of 6 times. And,
oh, cool.
And yeah, 6 times in a 7-month period. And what wound up happening is, as a performer in the main stage production of Royal Caribbean, you're asked to have a separate show that you front yourself. And Marianne chose to have a Stevie Nicks tribute show, but staged very similar to what a VH1 Storytellers episode would be. And,
right.
She created this show of all Stevie Nicks compositions and songs, and she told the stories of each one, and it was very informative, and she does a great job at it, and it's something that we do together now under Damn the Light, even off the ship. We have a demo reel out. It's called A Night of Nicks. And,
how cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's Marianne is so invested and such a fan of Stevie Nicks. She makes the audience, if you didn't love her already, she makes the audience love Stevie even more. And she's not trying to be Stevie on stage. It's not that type of tribute show. She dresses like Stevie Nicks, and she has the cape changes and all kinds of stuff that go on. But it's really she's honoring Stevie, but she's being herself, and that's what we wound up doing on the cruise ships towards the end. And so I was coming back on to perform for the last 3 cruises.
Right.
And so we did that show together.
Right. Let me see. I've done 3 Cunard cruises where I worked, where I actually gave talks. And twice I was able to lead Black Childers, and we did a big photo exhibition as well of his photos.
That's amazing.
And then I would get him up on stage, and we would regale them with stories of, you know, all the different folks in the photo.
He was very talented.
Yes, he was. So we did those 3, but then when I was with my mom and dad in Cyprus, I went on 30 ships, and I was trying to, there was Liberace on one of them, Renata Tibaldi was on another.
Wow.
And they all performed, you know what I mean? And so that's
amazing.
Why when I wasn't flattering you about the quality of the entertainers, I meant it. Because those entertainers,
Liberace on a cruise. Wow.
Well, and what he was doing, he was rehearsing for his London show. This was from New York going back to London. And it was great. Every night he did a show. I wasn't able to go because I was too small. They did it, you know, they had two sittings for dinner, and the children had to be fed early, and we weren't allowed to go. So then my mother met him, and so then she told him that, and then he came to my room.
Yeah,
and I got
that's crazy.
Emerald jacket, and it was all jeweled, and he smelled so good, and he gave me a big hug, and then I went and went to bed, and I was happy because I'd been able to hug Liberace.
That's a great story.
Well, no, but it's what I meant about Marianne and the shows that get rehearsed, the shows that you said the other kids were doing. I'm sorry, I can't remember what show you said, a musical production that they did.
Saturday Night Fever.
Oh, thank you, Saturday Night Fever. Yes. Yeah, you know what I mean, because having seen those two, I did get to see Renata Tibaldi. I was old enough to stay up for that when I was 7. But Liberace, I was 4, and I couldn't stay up.
Past your bedtime.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. I was thrilled when you were talking about being stuck on a ship, but I just kept laughing about it to Rick. I said, it's the only excuse that can fly with me. He was stuck on a ship.
Well, you know, I had mixed up my dates as to when I had originally, you know, said that I would be able to talk with you guys. And when I realized it, I thought, oh my God, how is this going to happen? And I felt so badly about that. Really, I felt terrible. But there was nothing I could do. I'm so sorry.
It was fine. It was just we were like scrambling a little bit because we were like, okay. Well, we had this with our friend Dana Gillespie, who was stuck in Mystique doing the Mystique Jazz and Blues Festival. She tried to call. She tried to get on Skype. She tried everything. We couldn't get her on the phone, babe. You know, sometimes it just doesn't work out. And, I mean, no matter how many plan Bs you have, sometimes it just, you know, there it is. And we're just so happy we're able to come today.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thankfully our plan B worked out today. So
yes. So now, have you got any weekly shows or monthly events going on in New York that we can help you promote?
Well, we are at the moment we're working on a couple of things that aren't solidified yet. Some residencies, but coming up this weekend, we are doing an event at DROM, which is for the 40th day of James Jackson, who's an amazing performer. He's just incredible, and he does guest spots at a ton of our events.
Cool.
And so what Marianne and I will be doing there, it's a Damn the Light event. And so we'll be overseeing the night and the performances and guests and things like that. But we're also going to be doing a guest performance on stage that night for James. And it's going to be a small acoustic section of the Stevie Nicks show, A Night of Nicks. So that's what we'll be doing this coming Sunday.
How lovely!
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. So I'm excited
for
that.
You were just talking about that. That's so exciting. My goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, call out to New York. Anyone who wants to see Mike and Marianne do this wonderful... what was it? A Taste of Nicks or just Nicks?
A night of Nicks. A tribute to Stevie
Nicks. Night of Nicks, not a taste of Nicks.
Yeah.
Angie, stop rewriting. Oh, dear. I'm nice.
Have you ever met Stevie Nicks?
No. No, I have not. And I would love to.
I would imagine the two of you would probably get along quite well.
Now, there is a possibility that I met her in Los Angeles or San Francisco on a couple of occasions.
Right.
But
yeah.
But I must be very honest and say, to my best conscious recollection, I think I would remember something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know
I'm
what
sure.
I mean? I don't think it would have slipped my mind. So
Right.
No, I don't think we've met, because I'm sure I would remember that. And I'm a big fan. But, no, I've never met her, and I would love to. So, and I liked a lot of the other people that you guys, well, you in particular, Mike, had mentioned that you enjoyed doing tributes for. Now, it was it you, or am I losing my mind? Was it you that, or is it Gary, Rick, who does the Moody Blues tribute? Now, I know you do, you're interested in Led Zeppelin. And what was the other one that you liked so much?
Oh, I also have this other tribute that I do with my father and uncle. It's a tribute to Yes, which is similar to Moody Blues,
and
progressive rock. Yeah, we also do a tribute to Steely Dan as well. And that's a really fun thing to do. We don't get to do it very often because Steely Dan, it's a 14-piece band we have, and it's very complicated to get together, but, you know, we have three backing vocalists, a horn section.
Right.
Amazing charts written by Arun Luthra, who also helped write the charts for the Stevie Nicks show. So it's a big production, and, it's a lot of fun to do. And I'm trying to figure out when the next time we can actually make that happen here. But I will keep you posted on that, for sure.
Yeah, well, I was just impressed when I saw all the different... you know, I could, looking at your influences and the way you talked about your father and your uncle, I got a really good feeling of how your mind reached out and embraced all the different music that you found interesting. And so I just wanted to mention that, you know, you're not stuck on one thing. You have tribute bands for all the various elements that you enjoy. Yeah.
Yeah, we've done disco, R&B. I mean, I'm such a huge R&B fan. It has definitely influenced me. Aretha Franklin, Stevie Wonder. So they were huge influences on me. And so we do all kinds of stuff. We've done disco tributes. Actually, the disco tribute was what we had done for your first book signing that you were with us for at Le Poison Rouge. And
right.
That was a disco, a rock disco night. We did a set of classic disco songs, and then we did a crossover set of rock disco songs, which it was just a lot of fun to do that. So we've done definitely all different genres. And, you know, the Moody Blues would be a great one to do. I'm a big fan of the Moody Blues as well.
Well, you're such a, because of your gift at orchestrating and arranging, and then the keyboard, bear in mind, I've had the good fortune and the pleasure of working with Rick Wakeman and with Justin from the Moody Blues. So, you know what? This was all exciting stuff for us.
It was an amazing time. Music technology, it branched out and created without, people don't realize, and progressive rock, unfortunately, is a lost art in the sense now. I mean, it's something that was very culty, and I don't think that it had the fan base that, you know, a more mainstream band like the Stones would have. But what people don't realize is that all the top 40 music that you'll hear today, Rihanna, Beyonce, I mean, Miley Cyrus, all of these people that are putting out music, it's all synthesized and program-based. And without progressive rock, synthesizers and MIDI programming and sequencers, it would have never developed, and I don't know if, who knows where music would be without that movement in music.
So you're right.
I really love that.
Mike, will you come back and talk to us again? We've got 10 seconds, and I want you to say goodbye to your fans, please.
I would love to come.
I'm choked. I'm gutted. I can't believe an hour flew past.
I know. It went by very quickly. But I really had a great time, and thank you guys so much for having me. I really
appreciate you
asking me to come on and speak, because it's been a lot of fun, and
I love you. I'm so grateful for all the nice things you've done for me, and we just enjoyed so much having you on and getting a chance to talk to you about the stuff you're excited about and what you want to do. It's fun for us. Thank you so much, Mike Greco.
Thank you,
Mike.
We love you very much. Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome.
Nice talking to you guys.
Thank you, Angie.
Oh, thanks, everybody. I appreciate it so much. Have a great weekend, you guys. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.